ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. Text number 56. This is the last verse of this chapter. Athavi priche tvam vira.
Athavi priche tvam vira.
Yadartham tvam ihagataha. Tadvayam nirvya likena pradipadyamahe hrida athavi prachche tvam vira yadartham tvam iha gataha tadvayam nirvya likena प्रतिपद्यामहे हृदा अथापि पृच्छे त्वां वीरा यदर्थं त्वम् इहागतः तद्वयं निर्व्यलीकेन प्रतिपद्यामहे हृदा। Word to word translation. Atha api. In spite of all this, Prichhe, I ask. Tvam, you. Veera, O valiant king. Yat artham, the purpose. Tvam, you. Iha, here. Agataha, have come. Tat, that vayam vi nirvyalikena without reservation pratipadyamahe we shall carry out hrida with heart and soul. Translation: in spite of all this, I ask you, O valiant king, the purpose for which you have come here, whatever it may be, we shall carry it out without reservation. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. When a guest comes to a friend's house, it is understood that there is some special purpose. Kadamuni could understand that such a great king as Swayambhuva, although travelling to inspect the condition of his kingdom, must have had some special purpose to come to his hermitage. Thus, he prepared himself to fulfill the king's desire. Formerly, it was customary that the sages used to go to the kings and the kings used to visit the sages in the hermitages. Each was glad to fulfill the other's purpose. This reciprocal relationship is called Bhakti Karya. There is a nice verse describing the relationship of mutual beneficial interest between the Brahmana and the Kshatriya. Kshatram Dvijatvam. Kshatram means the royal order and the Dvijatvam means the Brahminical order. The two were meant for mutual interest. The royal order would give protection to the Brahmanas for the cultivation of spiritual advancement in society, and the Brahmanas would give their valuable instruction to the royal order on how the state and the citizens can gradually be elevated in spiritual perfection. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 21st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama.
ಓಂ ಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಾಂಜಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಜನಶಲಾಕೆಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೇ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ. ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರೋ ಶ್ರೀಯುತಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರುನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಂ ಸಹಗಣರಘುನಾಥಾನ್ವಿತಂ ತಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಚೈತನ್ಯದೇವಂ ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾಕೃಷ್ಣಪಾದಾನ್ ಸಹಗಣಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ. ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧೋ ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪದೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಗಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೇ. ತಪ್ತ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗಿ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೇ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ. ವಾಂಚಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯೇವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಭೂತೈರ್ಮಹಾದ್ಭಿರ್ಯ ಇಮಾ ಪುರೋ ವಿಭೂ ನಿರ್ಮಾಯ ಶೇತೆ ಯದಮೂಷ ಪುರುಷ ಭುಂಕ್ತೆ ಗುಣಾನ್ ಷೋಡಶ ಷೋಡಶಾತ್ಮಕ ಸೋಲಂಕೃಷೀಷ್ಟ ಭಗವಾನ್ ವಚಾಂಸಿ ಮೇ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಹಿಯರ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ವರ್ಸ್ ದರ್ಸ್ ಅ ಕಾನ್ವರ್ಸೇಷನ್ ಬಿಟ್ವೀನ್ ಕರ್ದಮ ಆಂಡ್ ಸ್ವಯಂಭುವ ಮನು ಇನ್ ದ ಹೆರ್ಮಿಟೇಜ್ ಆಫ್ ಕರ್ದಮ ಮುನಿ. There is a description about the cooperation between the different varnas, especially here between the kshatriyas and the brahmanas. So in the ancient times there was a proper order of varna, there was a perfect classification of different varnas, and it used to be maintained very well. However, if you see the current situation, everything is topsy-turvy. The varnas are mixed up, things are not in order. If a child is born, practically in Kali Yuga, the child has to go through suffering from the early childhood. As we know, in many parts of the world, especially in India, we can see kids, they have exams to get their admission to grade 1. They have to go through a kind of a competitive, maybe not be a competitive, yeah, kind of a competitive exam. There is an interview and they had to study so many things just to get admission to a good school. And it's insufficient. The parents have to provide a good sum of money also to give the admission. So sometimes it is called the donation for the management. So it is grade 1. A kid has to go through a torture just to get admission, to get some education from the grade 1. So, what's going on? So this is Kali Yuga, and then what happens? Go through the whole, you know, the whole years of education, and I think the back problem starts from the early childhood. If you see the schools and how they carry their bags, small kids, and the bag size are much bigger than their back, and it's so big. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I used to have only one book, one textbook, grade 1, 2, 3. I can remember just one book, one textbook, that's all. It was much easier. There was not much of a, you know, I didn't have a bag. Maybe I had a small box to carry a few notebooks and, you know, one textbook. And maybe grade 4 or 5, I had a few more books. It was very simple, even for me. I had a good time. I didn't have so much of pressure to study. But when I see even my nephew and niece, the amount of book they carry and how much pressure parents are putting forth to educate them, it is, you know, inconceivable. It's so much. Big bags and, you know, going to school early in the morning. Okay, and they are thinking about tuition from, right from, you know, grade 4, grade 5. The kids need to have tuition. So, such an immense pressure. Then what happens? You know, somehow or other get graduated, year 11, 12, again a lot of pressure. Then they get into the uni, then again pressure. And if they at all get into the uni, it is said some of the competitive exams to get into certain universities in India, it is the toughest in the world. You know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people, students are writing the exams, and maybe top 1,000 would get admission. Here, again, here also it's a big thing. People want to get into the university and they want to get some scholarship. It is a hard struggle, a lot of pressure. We can see in all communities, whether it be devotee community or non-devotee community. Still, pressure is on just to get an admission. And big fees too. It is nothing cheap. It's so expensive. Melbourne Uni, for international student, fees is around 34 grand every year. 34 grand. Think about that. Such an amount of money. Maybe for local students, maybe half or a bit less than half. But it's a lot of money. Then what happens? It's very interesting. I speak to a lot of students, and many of them, they say they don't like what they're doing. I had to do this subject. I really like this course. So I wanted to do that. And they go through that first. They are very enthusiastic. I see them during the beginning of the semester. They say, I have done this. You know, I have, oh, French is my breath subject, breath language. And I have this, I have that. A lot of excitement. And we go, you know, week 8, week 9, speak to them. Oh, such a struggle. I really didn't want to do this. So the same principle is applicable even year after year. And in Melbourne Uni, they have introduced a new system that is the Melbourne model. So there is no clarity at all what one is going to do in the beginning of the course. So you have, you know, it's the 3-year science degree. So the science degree is equally applicable to become an engineer or any kind of science field. So students are taking everything. They are not specializing in anything. They are taking everything, one from here, one from there. And first year, if you ask, what they say, you know, we don't know what we're doing. Second year, some clarification. Third year, it's like, I have done this and this, but I don't know what to do next. So this is the state of the affair. After going through all this torture, after coming to a very prestigious university and taking up a course, it's not clear what to do next. And then what happens? They find a job, something which is totally different from what they have studied. And interestingly, there was this concept of a double degree. That is, if this doesn't work out, then the other thing. Law and engineering. It was a strange combination. I used to think, you know, I used to ask many students, what are you studying? I am studying law and engineering. I asked, why? What a strange combination. He said, you know, look, you know, we want to try. At least, if this doesn't work out, at least the other thing. So it is very clear that it is clear that no one knows what is their nature. One devotee was telling me, he is an astrologer. He was doing preaching, university preaching. He used to say, when the students approach, you know, when they become friends with him, and you know, he used to look at their chart and give some advice, you know, what is better for them. He said it's difficult, but he used to give some advice. Okay, maybe you can try in this direction. Maybe it will be a bit better. Because people don't know what they're doing, what is their nature. So this is Kali Yuga. Things are completely mixed up. And there is no choice. What is the choice? If you want to live in this world, in the material world, and if it's the age of Kali, no choice. Better off be born in some other age. Maybe in Satyayuga, maybe in Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, where, okay, at least it is clear. What is one's guna? At least guna is defined. Then one can act according to one's nature. Even Bhagavad Gita very clearly says one has to act according to one's nature. So if you try to see Krishna system, it is very different and it is very intelligent. There was a story of a professor, in an elite job, a professor in mechanical engineering. You know, he very big position in a big university. Then he gave up and he thought, you know, it is really not for me. I don't want to write papers. I don't want to do so much of intellectual work. I want to get my hands dirty. So he gave up his profession and he started work as a mechanic. And he was actually writing. He was actually professing himself how good it is to get the hand dirty and have to feel things with hands. So he came to that platform. He said, okay, this is my real nature. So he was actually showing, he was kind of acting as a Brahmana. Then he showed his nature as a Shudra. And he was fitting himself in the Shudra category. And he wrote a book also, saying everyone should try it out. Don't stick to one position, try something else. So he was again showing some Brahminical quality that he is trying to teach what he had experienced. So this is a mix of things. Now, if you see Krishna's system, it is very scientific because everyone has certain kind of gunas. It is not completely applicable in the age of Kali, but if you see the previous ages, people are affected by certain gunas. Everyone, every conditioned being is affected by a certain guna, and that profession is according to the same guna. So that makes life much easier. One doesn't have to go through the whole, 25 years of education and then realize that I have done a wrong thing. So they can, from the childhood, they have some understanding what they need to do, and the parents have some understanding. And sometimes it is a bit shocking for us, 100 generations carpentry. The profession is trade is carpentry for 100 generations. How is that? Or 500 generation priests. So this is how it was, because the gunas were intact and the occupation was intact. So this is Krishna's system, and there is a reason why such a system was present, because if one's occupation is defined and if one gets trained right from the beginning, then one doesn't have to spend a lot of time and energy for material sustenance. Rather, he can focus on spiritual advancement. So that's why there was Varnashram system, especially speaking about Varna. Yes, and when things are changed, now there are a lot of unemployment. People struggle to get a job. Even after a lot of struggle, if they get a job, still they can be fired. But there was no concept of unemployment in the Vedic system. And there was an interesting ratio between different varnas. Assume there are 1,000 people in the society. Okay. Then how many brahmanas are required in that 1,000, among the 1,000 men, how many brahmanas are required? Just one. So one brahmana, and for one brahmana, the ratio was 9 kshatriya. So there is one brahmana, and then he can instruct 9 kshatriyas. Then there used to be 90 vaishyas. So 100 people done, and rest 900 shudras. So this was the kind of ratio: 1:9:90:900. So in 1,000 people, 900 are shudras, one brahmana, 9 kshatriya, and about 90 vaishyas. So this was the general ratio of the varna divisions. So it used to work pretty well, and there used to be cooperation between the varnas, as it is given in this purport. There is kshatram and dvijatvam. Kshatram is referring to the royal order, and dvijatvam, the brahminical order. So they used to cooperate. And brahmana can train anyone. It's not that brahmana can train only brahmanas. They can only teach Vedas. But brahmana can train all other classes. They can train brahmanas, they can train kshatriya, vaishyas, and shudras. Even if a brahmana trains a shudra, the brahmana doesn't become a shudra. Still he holds his class. He remains as a brahmana, but he can train. Similarly, we can see that even in Mahabharata, initially there was nothing in Indraprastha. Then from the advice of Krishna and other brahminical order, Pandavas established Indraprastha. So from the brahminical advice, the Indraprastha was established, and as soon as the Vaishyas found that there is a strong rule and there is a good monarch, all the Vaishyas went to Indraprastha. So there was Vaishyas, then the Shudras followed. So from the Brahminical order, there can be Brahmanas actually bring Kshatriyas, and from there can be Vaishyas, and then there can be Shudras. The whole social system can be built based on the instructions of the Brahmanas. And as it is done, as it is executed by the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas will naturally come. It is a common thing now also. If the government is strong, if the investors, if they can put trust in the government, they are ready to invest. The same thing used to be there in the Vedic times also. When the Kshatriyas were strong, then the Vaishyas would come. They do their mercantile activities. Then there used to be Vaishyas who would serve all the other three communities. So there used to be a cooperation between all the classes, and Brahmanas used to give instructions to Kshatriyas, and Kshatriyas used to establish a spiritual system within the whole Varnashram community. So everyone used to practice spirituality under the guidance of Kshatriyas, under the establishment of the Kshatriyas, and as instructed by the Brahmanas. So the system was pretty good. It was doing very well. However, as the time progressed, we know, as the age of Kali progressed, what happened? The whole system collapsed. So that is actually the one of the characteristics of Kali Yuga, is that Varnashram system is completely doomed. So in Kali Yuga, the fall down of Kali Yuga, Srila Prabhupada explains, began from the fall down of Brahmanical class. So it didn't really start from the lower strata, but it started from the upper strata, that is from the Brahmanical class. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about the fall down of Sringi Brahmana. He became proud. And then from there, all the fall down started. And it is very, very obvious. If you see Indian culture, it is very obvious how this fall down took place. Brahmanas, they created a class of untouchables. Brahmanas told, okay, lower caste, we will not touch them. We will not instruct them. It is the duty of a Brahmana to be magnanimous. It is the duty of a Brahmana to instruct spiritual message to everyone, including to Shudra and even people who are lower than Shudra. In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is explained, Kirada Purnantra Pulinda Pulkasha Abhira Shumpha Yavana Kasataya Yenyeja Papa Yadab Ashraya Ashraya Shuddhanditasme Prabhavishnave Namaha. So there, it is mentioned, any classes of men, Kirata, Huna is giving different classes of men who are not even falling into the category of Shudras. They are lesser than Shudras. And finally, if the name is not mentioned, there is yet one who is attached to sinful activities. Even all of them can be purified if they take shelter of a devotee. Yet apashraya ashraya. Ashraya is the Supreme Lord. So one who has taken shelter of the Lord, that anyone can be purified. That is the power of Vishnu, Prabha Vishnu, all powerful Vishnu. Now, what Brahmanas did, they told themselves to be a superior class. They didn't want to instruct other classes. Especially they did instruct Kshatriyas to some degree. And lesser than that, they didn't instruct. And Shudras and below, they never instructed. Then there was a big movement in India. They wanted their own rites. They wanted their own temples. It is very interesting that in many parts of India, Shudras and people who were lesser than Shudras, they were not allowed to go to temple. This was the social system. What, you know, how is it possible to have a peaceful spiritual society if this is a system? So for hundreds of years, these people, they were not allowed to enter into temple. So basically Vishnu worship was not allowed for these people. Those who were born in a certain caste, they couldn't come to the temple. I remember late 50s, in Kerala, there was the whole declaration that all the people can come to the temple, can enter the temple. There was a declaration like that, a joint declaration by two kings. It was just before independence or just after independence. So this was the system. People not allowed. There was a mistreatment of the whole community. And we can see the ratio, because most of the people were Shudras. And they had no access whatsoever to worship. So that's why we can see from the fall down of the Brahmanical order, all the rest of the orders, they fell down from spiritual practices. They didn't want to have any connection to Brahmanical community. They started seeing Brahmanas as enemies, because you know, who are they? So they had their own protests, their own, even some of the castes, they created their own temples. They had this, their own gurus. So it went on. Eventually everything is completely topsy-turvy. And when we come to Vaishnavism, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we can understand we are beyond Varnas. Krishna consciousness has nothing to do with Varnas. Let it be any Varna, let it be in any mode one is situated, one can make progress in Krishna consciousness. Even in Bhagavatam, in the first canto, Suta Goswami, He's the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, right? He's speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. He calls himself Viloma Jata. I am a lowborn. It's not out of humility, not out of humility. If you see the family line, he's not from an old Brahminical class. So he calls himself Viloma Jata. But he spoke Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam says, okay, there is Varnas, there is a social system, but the spiritual advancement is beyond the Varna. It has nothing to do with Varna. One can be in any Varna, still one can make spiritual progress. So many examples we can see in Shastra, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When we can see extreme examples of Vritrasura. Vritrasura, he was a demon. He was affected by, apparently his body was affected by the mode of passion and ignorance. But his consciousness, it was completely spiritual. He wanted to attack. In one sense, he was acting according to his nature. What does a demon do? He wants to just attack and kill and wants to create disturbance to the demigods. And he did that. But internally, he was meditating upon Krishna. So it's such a drastic contrast inside and outside. Externally, he was a demon. He was acting as a demon. He was not just a very peaceful person. He was a demon. He was telling Indra, you come and kill me. Because he was asking him to kill me, because then he can attain Krishna. So he knew that by being killed by Indra, he would go back to Godhead. He knew that. So he was challenging and he was creating disturbances to Indra. And indeed, he was even advising Indra when they were about to flee away from the battlefield. When the demigods were fleeing away from the battlefield, he was actually advising the Kshatra Dharma. A Kshatriya shouldn't run away from the battlefield. He should fight. He should uphold the religious principle. So, Vritrasura's consciousness, it was completely clear. He was in such a consciousness. And his prayers, such a wonderful prayers. Before being killed by Indra, he offers beautiful prayers in the, we can read in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, beautiful prayers, where he's saying, it doesn't matter, I am just a servant of the servant. Dasana daso bhavidasmi bhuya. I am only a servant of the servant. Oh, he's asking, when will I again be reinstated in the position as a servant of the servant? So this was the consciousness of Vritrasura, not as a servant, servant of the servant. So of the parampara, servant of the parampara, that was the consciousness of Vritrasura. And his calling out for the Lord was calling out in separation. Ajadapaksham ivamataram gaga. Ajadapaksham, that is, the paksha means the wings. Ajadapaksham. If a bird, a baby bird, doesn't have the wings, the bird is completely dependent on the mother to eat, to survive. The sustenance is completely dependent on the mother. So Vritrasura was feeling himself without the association of the Lord, just like a baby bird. Ajada patram iva mataram khaga. Stanyam yatha vatsar yatha stutartha. And he was comparing himself to a calf without the mother cow. So how can a calf live without the mother? It's impossible. In the same way, Vritrasura was feeling completely deprived of the association of the Supreme Lord. He was feeling separation from the Lord. Such an advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. And priyam priyeva vishata vishanna. And just like a wife doesn't have the association of her husband, because then there is no possibility of reciprocation. So in that way, Vritrasura was feeling separation from the Lord. So this is the consciousness of Vritrasura, who was in a demon's body at the same time situated in pure Krishna consciousness. So Shastra is saying that yes, one can be in any mode of material nature. Of course, we are encouraged to come to the mode of goodness, because in whatever mode we are, by practice of Krishna consciousness, naturally we will get elevated in the modes and we'll come to Krishna consciousness. So the mode of goodness will naturally support our Krishna consciousness. It is conducive for development of our Krishna consciousness. So that is encouraged. At the same time, Krishna consciousness is independent of modes of material nature. So now, today I will speak about a devotee who was actually beyond, he is beyond the modes of material nature, who is really transcendental. So that devotee is Jayananda Prabhu, and today is his disappearance day. So Srila Prabhupada had instructed to glorify and to commemorate every year the disappearance of Jayananda Prabhu, his dear disciple. So he passed away in May 1st, 1977. So I will speak some of the glories and life of Jayananda Prabhu. So Jayananda Prabhu, he was born in America, and he was handsome, he was intelligent. He did his studies in mechanical engineering from Ohio University. At the same time, he was driving a cab. Even though he could have got a well-paid job, he was just driving a cab in San Francisco for livelihood. So one day, Karandhara Prabhu asked, "Why are you working this job? You could have applied for some better paid job. You could have worked that job." So Jayananda Prabhu told, "I don't fit into the upper class. So I'm a misfit to the upper class. So that's why I'm just driving a cab. So this was the mood of Jayananda Prabhu. Very humble mood. And in 1967, Jayananda Prabhu met Srila Prabhupada for the first time. Because even though he was driving the cab, he was earning some money. He felt himself completely dissatisfied. He felt himself quite vacant, you know. He felt quite incomplete within. So he heard that there's a Swami coming, and he thought, okay, I have some hope seeing this Swami. So he went and met Srila Prabhupada. And one of his first services was, he donated $5,000 to print Bhagavad Gita as it is. And Srila Prabhupada appreciated this till the last day of his life. So that was his whole life savings. The whole life saving Jayananda Prabhu gave to Srila Prabhupada as a donation. That was the first donation. He gave everything to Srila Prabhupada. And it is mentioned that Jayananda Prabhu had such a strong attraction for morning program. Wherever he was, he would get up before 4 o'clock. He would take bath and he will chant all the prayers, and he will cook prasadam. He will do kirtan himself. He will offer to the Lord, and he will read something and he will take prasadam. So this was his routine wherever he was, not just in the temple, wherever he was. So he had such a strong attraction for the morning program, and he had such an enthusiasm. It's mentioned Jayananda Prabhu, he used to love prasadam. He used to honor prasadam. He said if he finds a small portion of prasadam lying on the floor, he would go, he would take, and he would lick and take the last bit of prasadam on the floor. Such was his devotion for prasadam. And he knew how to attract people through prasadam. Whatever he did, he would distribute prasadam. If he goes for harinam, he will distribute prasadam. He will be just going to market, he will take some prasadam and distribute. So he used to attract everyone with prasadam. So he knew the potency of prasadam. And he himself would honor a large quantity of prasadam. So he was a good eater. He was big and strong. He could eat a large sum of the quantity of prasadam. And it is mentioned that he was such a person, he would cook peanut butter halwa. And 10 o'clock in the night, he would come to the devotees and tell, "Hey Prabhus, please check this out." And he would offer a big plate of peanut butter halwa. So this was his nature. So it was mentioned one time, one devotee was sleeping, and Jayananda Prabhu, he woke this devotee up, and then he just, you know, just got out from the sleep, and he said, "Please open the mouth." So he opened the mouth and he threw a gulab jamun in. So he was quite jovial, and he was funny. So he used to act in a very nice way. He used to feed everyone a lot of prasadam. And he knew the potency of prasadam. And when a new devotee would come, one devotee remembers, so he came to the temple for the first time. He made a big plate of prasadam. It was difficult for one person to eat. So he gave that prasadam to this devotee. He was first timer. He took a long time. He finished that prasadam. When he finished that prasadam, Jayananda Prabhu, he made another plate of the same size. And he put in front of him and said, no, you have to eat this also. Because Prabhu said you have to eat a lot of prasadam, especially the first 6 months of Krishna consciousness. You had to eat a lot of prasadam. So this devotee had the full second plate of prasadam and he struggled and he finished somehow. But he finished the second plate of prasadam also. So this was the Jayananda Prabhu's attraction for prasadam. And indeed, Jayananda Prabhu was so attracted to kirtan. One time, the devotees served for 10 hours, pretty much straight. They had some prasadam in between, but they worked for 10 hours. It was a long time. And it was about late, close to 10 o'clock in the night. And the last arati was about, you know, was taking place. Then Jayananda Prabhu told the devotees, now let's go. Let's go for the arati. Let's chant and dance. So devotees were thinking, this is the last thing that we want to do now. We're already so tired, you know, 10 hours of work. But Jayananda Prabhu, he just ran to the shower. He took a bath. He put on some fresh clothes. He came to the temple room and he started chanting and dancing. It is said, even if there are one or two devotees, he would chant and dance with the same enthusiasm. So the same thing he carried in the Harinam also. He would just chant and dance. He had such, it is said, his energy was inexhaustible. Anytime he had energy for everything. And his preaching endeavors was even very interesting. I'll just read a small snippet of his preaching endeavor. His preaching was very simple and easy to listen to. We just have to keep chanting and have faith in the name. We just have to chant and take prasadam. Srila Prabhupada is so kind to give us such a simple process. So this was the essence of Jayananda Prabhu's preaching. Just chant and be happy and take prasadam. That's it. And he was very, very appreciative of Srila Prabhupada for giving such a wonderful process, and it's very simple. One time it is said, it was 11:30 in the night. So he was repairing a Sankirtan van. So he was under the van, repairing the van. So only his two legs were outside. So he was completely inside, lying, and he was repairing. And the two legs were outside. And two hippies were standing outside. And Jayananda Prabhu was preaching to them. So only thing they could hear was, they can hear what Jayananda Prabhu was preaching. And no one can see him because he was under the van. And the hippies, they were listening his preaching with rapt attention. So they said, Jayananda Prabhu could preach to anyone, no matter whom. So he had such a strong taste for preaching. And anyone who remembers about Jayananda Prabhu, they know about his humility. He was so humble that he didn't want to come to the forefront of anything. So to give a lecture or lead a kirtan, do an arati, he used to do all the background services. Maybe cooking or maybe fixing up things or cleaning. And he would take everyone to the forefront and he would ask everyone else to do the other services. This was the mood of Jayananda Prabhu. Really a Vaikuntha mood. You know, pushing everyone to Krishna and going to the backside. So this was the mood of Jayananda Prabhu. He used to clean the rubbish all the time. So he was the temple president. And he used to support the temple by driving a cab. The whole night he would drive a cab and then with that income he used to support the temple. And one day he used to empty the rubbish bin. So he used to do that for every day for many years. So one new person came and he was seeing him emptying the rubbish. He said, you know, after many years, Jayananda Prabhu told, after many years I got this opportunity to empty this rubbish bin. I got the service after many years of waiting. So we can say, you know, in one sense he's talking from a very high spiritual standard because, okay, even to do some service of Krishna, for Krishna, we have waited for many years, maybe many, many lifetimes. So what he was telling was true, but that was his consciousness. So then this new person he helped in emptying the bin and cleaning up the place, and he became a devotee too. Just by that act, he became a devotee. He considered himself as junior to everyone. So if a new bhakta is there, he would ask, okay, Bhakta Michael, you know, what do you think about this? how to do this. He used to take guidance from everyone, even the new people. It's not that he knew who is what, but he used to take a humble position in doing anything. Any assignment was given to Jayananda Prabhu, he would complete it. Let it be anything, whether he knew it to do or no, he would, somehow or other he will get it done. Whatever pain it takes, he used to complete that task. And he never found fault in anyone. And if anyone glorified Jayananda Prabhu, he will first try to ignore or try to cut that. But if it continued, Jayananda Prabhu would leave that place. And he says, why people are glorifying me? He explained that if one stick around in the movement for some time, anyone get glorified. It's not because of the quality that one possesses, but anyone would get glorified just because one is in connection to Krishna consciousness or in connection to Krishna. It's not because of the quality of the person, it is because of Krishna. So that was the mood of Jayananda Prabhu. So he never tolerated, you know, the glorification. I was reading a quote from Dadhal Maharaj. One's advancement in Krishna consciousness can be measured by how much one is enjoying the glorification, personal glorification. If one is enjoying, one has to see one is on a neophyte platform. So if one becomes averse to hear one's own glory, then one can see that, okay, he is making advancement. So Jayananda Prabhu was on that platform. He was averse to hear his own glories. And of course, the most important service and the most remembered service that Jayananda Prabhu performed was organizing Rath Yatra year after year. And he was the first organizer of San Francisco Rath Yatra. It was just a truck. In a truck, he made a cart out of a truck, and that was the first Rath Yatra. And year after year, he organized Rath Yatra, and it became bigger and bigger. And till the last day, practically, he was helping to organize Rath Yatra. And Srila Prabhupada very much appreciated all the services that Jayananda Prabhu did. And there is a letter written by Srila Prabhupada in 1975 to Jayananda Prabhu. I'll read that letter. It's very small and it's very beautiful. I was very happy to get your recent letter. I am always thinking of you and praying to Krishna for your advancement in Krishna consciousness. Yes, I remember the old days in San Francisco. Krishna has been so kind upon me to have sent so many sincere disciples to help me push on this movement on behalf of my Guru Maharaj. You continue with your program there in San Francisco, always strictly keeping our principles, and Krishna will bless you with greater and greater realization of the importance of this movement. I am dependent upon you, my older disciples, to carry it on. I hope this meets you well. Even in the final meeting of Jayananda Prabhu with Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada remembered his initial contribution to publish and print Bhagavad Gita as it is. And I'll read the final pastime of Jayananda Prabhu. He was actually afflicted with cancer. So while preparing for New York Rath Yatra in 1976, Jayananda found painful lumps growing on his body. A godbrother worried that they might be cancerous, but Jayananda made him promise not to tell Srila Prabhupada until after the festival. Jayananda's main concern was that the Rath Yatra should be a success. Everything else was secondary. The New York Rath Yatra was indeed a great success. Rolling down Fifth Avenue, the three chariots delighted thousands of people, many becoming inspired to inquire into and even take up the practice of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada was ecstatic. He called it a grand success and thanked Jayananda for his service. The lumps on Jayananda's body turned out to be cancerous. He was diagnosed with leukemia, which gradually reduced his body to a shell. Accepting that he would die soon, Jayananda continued to express his deep gratitude towards Srila Prabhupada. His friends were shocked and saddened to see his disease ravaged his body. But Jayananda was still too busy performing devotional service to give it much concern. And when he did agree to medical treatment, he used his time in the hospital to tell doctors, nurses and patients about Krishna consciousness. Jayananda constantly thought about how to expand Rath Yatra festival to other cities. In his final months, he helped organize the Los Angeles Rath Yatra festival, making phone calls, raising money and guiding devotees. One day while walking on Venice Beach, where the festival would be held, he looked down and, as if visualizing the upcoming festival, said, "What a wonderful Rath Yatra." On May 1st, 1977, just a few months before the Rath Yatra festival, Jayananda passed from this world. In a letter written to Jayananda after his passing, Srila Prabhupada congratulated him on a glorious life and an even more glorious death, since both in life and at death, he had been absorbed in the service of Krishna. Prabhupada ordained that the disappearance day of Jayananda be celebrated like those of other Vaishnava saints. So this is the glory of Jayananda Prabhu. In fact, one time it is mentioned, after Jayananda Prabhu left his body, the devotee who were organizing the festival, they went to the council to get the permission. So there was a very strict, known as a very strict looking lady. So she, this lady asked, this officer, she asked this particular devotee that what happened to that devotee who is a tall, strong devotee? What happened to him? So this devotee told that, look, that was Jayananda Prabhu, he passed away. That time, this lady started crying. So it is mentioned that, you know, the very strict, strong lady, but just by the presence of Jayananda Prabhu, such a transformation, and, you know, she started crying. So he touched the heart of a lot of people. So this is the glory of Jayananda Prabhu. So I stop here, see if there are any questions or comments. Okay. Thank you very much. Grantharaj, yes, Prabhu, yeah. It is, I don't know the scripture, it's from the Bhaktirasamada Maharaja's lecture. I think one devotee told me, he heard from Bhaktirasamada Maharaja's lecture. So I can find out. So that's where I got this proportion, yeah. I didn't actually listen to Maharaja's lecture also. One devotee heard and he told me, then I remember. Huh? You read that before? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the Shastra. Yeah. Yeah. Ramana percent is 1 in 1,000. 1 in 1,000, yeah. So one person can instruct so many. Yeah, looks like maybe it's like a guru. Yeah. And interestingly, Srila Prabhupada wanted our community to be the Brahmana community, primarily, to give instruction to the society. And if you see, Prabhupada in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that if a small percentage becomes devotees, that will have a great influence for the rest of the society. So we could even see from that point of view that even a small percentage of the total population becomes Krishna consciousness, it will lead to a great influence to the wider community. So kind of comparison these two. Yeah. Thank you. Grantashimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Jnananda Prabhu ki jai.